Hello, welcome to Books on the Go, a podcast where we talk about our book of the week. I'm Anna Bailey-Karras and I'm here with Annie Waters. Hi, Annie.
Hello.
And this week we've been reading Coconut Children by Vivian Pham. But first, book news, and we have a Stella Prize long list to talk about. So this is it's a $50,000 prize in Australia for the best women's writing, and it's fiction or non-fiction.
Yes.
I think last year it was won by Jess Hill for See What You Made Me Do, an amazing book about domestic abuse. And I've forgotten who won the previous year. Was it?
We could look it up, but we're not going to.
We're going blank on some of the previous winners, but they were books that we loved, and we're just going blank. So that's not very helpful. So we'll move on to this year's long list. And he's laughing at me. So the 2021 Stella Prize long list of titles: Fathoms, The World in the Whale by Rebecca Giggs.
Yes.
Have you read this?
No, I've got it at home. I'm really keen to read it. She recently won the Carnegie Medal for it.
That's right. Yeah. I remember the Andrew Carnegie Medal for Excellence. Yes.
Okay. By the sounds of it. And it's exactly my kind of book. So it might be bumped up the reading pile.
I think it will be. Revenge, Murder in Three Parts by S.L. Lim.
And I have read that. Oh. That is a really interesting thriller about a woman who comes from Singapore to murder her brother in Sydney. She states that at the top. Novel, yes.
Fiction.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. The Animals in That Country by Laura Jean McKay, which I've heard quite a lot about.
Yeah, that's incredible. She imagines a flu that sweeps across Australia that infects people, gives them pink eye and the ability to understand animals. It's phenomenal.
And then Witness by Louise Milligan, which is a non-fiction book. And Louise Milligan has just been at Adelaide Writers Week. And this is about the injustices in the criminal justice system.
She was very close to the George Pell case. And so I think that's sprung out of that.
Yes. And Metal Fish Falling Snow by Kath Moore.
I don't know much about this. It's a YA novel. I think about a road trip.
Okay.
To Central Australia or somewhere remote.
Interesting.
But that's all I know.
Okay. The Wandering by Intan Paramedita, which we have read.
But that was the kind of choose your own adventure style book about a woman who makes a deal with the devil and kind of travels around the world. And you can read it in multiple different.
Set partly in Indonesia, partly in Jakarta, and partly in New York, I believe.
Yep, and France.
Yeah, it's really fun.
Yeah.
And really interesting. And turning the fairy tale and the way women are depicted in fairy tales on its head. Mm. So women behaving badly in The Wandering. And Stone Sky, Gold Mountain by Miranda Riwo, which I think you've read, Annie, or you?
No, I didn't read it.
Yes.
You didn't read it either?
No, not yet.
No.
But this is the novel that is about the gold rush in Australia with a Chinese-Australian family at the heart of it, which is a similar premise to How Much of These Hills is Gold by C. Pam Zhang, which we did read. Mm-hmm. I think I read with Amanda. And Miranda Riwo, the author of Stone Sky, Gold Mountain, which I can never say quickly.
Perhaps that's part of the point.
Yes. Interviewed C. Pam Zhang at Adelaide Writers Week. Did you see that
one? No, I didn't get to it.
Oh, it was a beautiful discussion. Yeah, really interesting. Blueberries by Eleanor Savage.
That's essays. It's getting a lot of hype. She is a wonderful essay writer.
Oh, that sounds interesting.
You'd probably know more of the references in it than I would because I'm not very in touch with the world of pop culture. No.
Oh, well, I'm flattered to think so, but I don't think you'd be shocked and appalled. Song of the Crocodile by Nadi Simpson, which I have just bought and really want to read because it's Jacqueline at 6 Minutes for Me has tipped this to win the Stella.
Yeah.
And others have been raving about it. You haven't read it yet, have you?
I have.
You have?
Yeah, I found it really hard going. It's beautiful and really mythical and I loved those elements of it, but it's not a happy book for this family.
I don't know if this is the week to be reading not a happy book, but I've got it now, so it's on the TBR. Smart Ovens for Lonely People by Elizabeth Tan, and this won the Readings Prize for First Fiction.
Yes.
Yep. And it's a collection of short stories. I really want to read that.
Yeah, interconnected, I'm pretty sure. Her previous collection was, which I really enjoyed. So, yeah, I'd be keen to read this too.
Good. And A Lonely Girl is a Dangerous Thing by Jessie Too. And that got a lot of hype last year. Mm-hmm. I haven't read it yet. Mm-hmm. And then there was a session where Jessie Too spoke with Neisha Dolan, who wrote Exciting Times
at
Adelaide Writers Week, which I didn't catch, but I will listen to the podcast of it. But I think because they cover similar ground.
Yeah,
in both some ways.
Contemporary women disaffected by society and kind of using sex or relationships as an out, perhaps.
Yes. Mm. And then The Bass Rock by Evie Wilde, which we loved.
Yeah, I haven't read it yet? No.
Oh, good.
You've got that to look forward to. It felt like it came out too long ago to be on this list. It must have been March last year, but I mean, that's exactly at the beginning of
it must have been
the
March,
period,
because it does feel like a long time ago that we read that.
Yeah.
Many books ago, put it that way. And Evie Wilde, of course, is Australian but also based in London. Mm,
and previous winner of the Miles Franklin.
Yes. And so that's – and I recommend that. It's just a really good read. Mm. And I think Amanda had it as one of her top three books of 2020.
Yeah.
So that is the Stella Prize long list, and on to our book of the week, Coconut Children by Vivian Pham.
So Vivian Pham is a writer. She writes fiction and she describes herself as a closet poet and an amateur screenwriter. She's currently studying creative writing. I think she's in third year now at university. Her father was a refugee from Vietnam in the 80s. So I think they grew up near the area where this story is set, in Cabramatta in Western Sydney. She wrote the first iteration of this story when she was 16. She said that she wrote very amateur fiction. She wrote fan fiction about One Direction until she was 13.
I love
it. And then she read the work of James Baldwin, and that really influenced her, and that's at the point that she decided that she would become a serious writer. So, yeah, she finished the manuscript for this before she turned 17. And then published an iteration of it, which then got picked up by a literary agent, and the revised edition has come out in 2020, published by Penguin Random House. So she really is a star on the rise. She's an incredibly emotionally mature young person. I saw her talking yesterday, and she is very measured and knows where she sits in the world, which is really interesting to see in someone so young. So yeah, this book, Coconut Children, is set in the late 90s in Cabramatta. It's about Sunny, whose father was a Vietnamese boat refugee, and Vince, who is a 16-year-old kid who's just come out of juvenile detention. He is, the way that Sunny describes him, he's the most attractive man on the planet. He's chiseled, and you know, he's slicked back hair, and he's always looking perfect. They live in pretty rough circumstances. There's a lot of domestic abuse. There's alcoholism. There's drugs that are very obvious on the streets, gangs. But the way that Vivian Pham presents this world is one of beauty and promise, and she loves this community, and you can really tell in the writing. So yeah, the story is kind of Sunny and Vince as they move towards each other in a kind of will they won't they relationship, but also within the surroundings and how will they manage to weather that storm.
Yeah.
What did you think?
I'm really enjoying it. I will confess I haven't quite finished yet. So I think I'm about 2/3 or even 3/4 of the way through, and I'm so impressed by the accomplishment at such a young age, and really, really excited to see Vivian Pham's career.
I had to stop myself from thinking, she's 16. She's 16. I really had to stop that because it was interfering with my reading of the book. And it got to the point where I've just let the writing wash over me now, and I'm kind of like, okay, she's better than I'll ever be, so that's fine. I can just move on from that now. It's incredibly assured writing.
It is. It really is. And I love the honesty of it, the warmth, the tone, and the compassion she has for her characters. And as you say, to achieve all of that and show that in the writing somehow at such a young age is very assured. And that's what really shines through in the book, because as you say, they're living in Cabramatta, it's not glamorous, and yet you do have this sense of warmth about their lives and hope in some sense, and just honesty, you know, just that it feels true. So it's a slice of life, and it's their Vietnamese Australian families. And I love that it feels very Australian, and it feels like they're, she's telling our story as Australians, but from a non-white point of view. And that reflects what our cities are, what our country is. And I just love that it's this slice of truth and part of our story, part that we just don't often
get an insight to like this. That's what I felt really privileged to be able to have a window into this world that, you know, this story is set 3 years before she was born, Vivian Pham, which I had to keep reminding myself as well. She didn't live through this. This isn't her childhood. This is the childhood of perhaps her parents, but, you know, probably the generation above her. The depth which she has gone into making this place feel real, as you say, and lived in, it's like you're walking around there, and I have to keep pinching myself to remind myself that it's not her world necessarily. It's close to one that she knows. Also, yeah, it feels like such a privilege and a joy to be allowed into that space.
Yeah. And the high school, all the scenes in the high school really ring true, don't they? And it is, I think it's very clever that is it set in the 90s?
Yeah, 1998.
So it's actually not quite pre-mobile phones, but there's no sort of mobile phone, there's no technology element, there's no emailing or phones or anything like that. So it could be set in the 80s, it could be in the 2000s, and I think that's clever because it won't date, you know, in that way. And I love the characters. So Sunny is her sort of romantic fantasies that really do ring true of a teenage girl. Yep. She's about 16, isn't she? And then how she navigates her family life, which is really, it's done very matter-of-factly, but it's poignant as well because she has a mother who just yells at them and is quite volatile. But of course you can glean from her behaviour and her history that perhaps she's suffering post-traumatic stress disorder or she's suffering from her experiences in Vietnam and as a refugee perhaps. But it's not spelled out. But no. I just think she's handled that really, as you say, really in a mature way, and that Sunny likewise is just navigating that without too much fuss, and you feel for her, but she's not playing for sympathy at all. But that was beautiful. That's beautifully done. And then that insight into what it would be like to live as a family where you haven't had this easy path. You know, you've got members of your family, her father or her mother or their grandmother, who in very different ways that everyone's coping with something.
Well, yeah, no one's quite coping is what I was going to say. And so it's up to these kids to kind of just run their own lives, you know. Sunny looks after her younger brother, Oscar, who has brittle bones. Her mother is, as you say, aggressive and very volatile, and they never know from one moment to the next whether she's going to be the nice mum or the shouty mum. And their dad, who seems sweet and lovely but also distant. So they have such heavy things on their shoulders for such young people, and it's just not a world that I had to grow up in. And so
also it's very specific to their experiences coming from Vietnam to Australia, but also those family dynamics are a universal story. There are lots of people in lots of different contexts that have various sort of dysfunctional families or circumstances where the children have to bear that load. So in that sense, I think it could translate to any, you know, anyone in any country could be reading this and could relate to elements of it. And I love that she includes the Vietnamese language during the story. It gives you a sense of, you know, the way that Sunny then has to inhabit two worlds.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the fact that Vivian doesn't translate it for us, for me, the white reader, you know, is good. It shows you there's an alienation there that, or a level of inclusivity that I'm not in. And, you know, if I had the time and energy to learn Vietnamese, I could get a different layer out of this book, but I would never understand it on the level of someone who had grown up in that culture and community. So it's, yeah, yeah, it's an interesting layered effect. I think there are several books here for several different communities, and depending on your level of entry to each of those, you get something else out of it.
Yeah, so I loved that. And for me, it started a little bit slowly as we just get to know the characters. Mm. But again, because of the warmth and the tone, I was very happy just to take it slowly at the beginning. It then ramps up a little bit because, Sonny gets a bit excited about it's not Vince being back, and it starts to, you know,
it's not the a pace plotty quickens, book, really.
But it's not a plot-driven book.
Yeah.
And it won't surprise you to know this, but if it was me editing it, I might have pared it back a little bit. But that wouldn't surprise you.
Yeah, well, it was interesting. I thought that too. I think the language is really over-rich. It's technicolor. Everything is kind of has three different adjectives, and not in a schoolgirly way, but in, I think, a way that rings true to the character. So I think that is a deliberate choice. And interestingly, I read the previous draft that she wrote was more stripped back. And so when she went through with the editor for Penguin Random House, she put more in, more lush description, and kind of made it more extra, I think, to fictionalize it slightly more away from her own family story.
Right.
And I think in that respect, it does feel a bit like a first novel, and that beautiful use of language, she will learn how to tame that and kind of control it a little bit more.
I can't wait.
But there's lots of metaphor and puns, and almost every line has a little twist or a joke, but not in an overwhelming way. I didn't find it cloying to read, but sometimes I thought, oh, this could have been pared back a little bit. I agree.
Yeah, but there's some beautiful phrases. So there's Vince remembering Sonny when he knew her when she was younger. Before his trouble began, the sun shone forever in her eyes, and he had been content to play even with her shadow. Mm. Isn't that gorgeous? Yeah. I think if you love, for example, Trent Dalton's Boy Swallows Universe, and you have that warmth, that slice of life, and really
it's a very similar world, is what I was thinking.
Similar world, and it's really generous language, and I think that shines through.
The things that I loved about it were the tenderness, the boys. So Vince has this gang of 16-year-olds that seem to not have any parents, or actually don't have any parents, and they all kind of hang out at this big sleep out. But they're really tender towards each other, and they care. You know, one of them has lost his dad several years ago, and on the anniversary of his death, or on this kind of special night, they light candles and leave offerings. And Vince wants to go for a walk, and the other boys say, oh, no, we don't want to leave Alex. You know how he gets.
Yeah.
And it was really touching to me that they, even in the face of, you know, no one has really cared for them, and they have figured out how to care for each other. And it's, I found that really beautiful.
Yes. So that gives you hope for in terms of their futures too. So no, we're recommending this, The Coconut Children by Vivian Pham. What an exciting writer.
Mm-hmm.
And coming up next week, we are doing Open Water by Caleb Azuma Nelson. And in the meantime, you can follow us on Facebook at Books on the Go. You can email us at booksonthegopodcast@gmail.com. And I'm on Instagram, Twitter, and Litzy at A. Bailey Karras. And Annie?
I'm on Instagram, Litzy, and Twitter at Mr. _Annie.
Fabulous. We'll see you next week. Bye for now.
Thanks. Bye.